Okay, there it goes, and here we are. Lots going on, and I'll tell you, we have been watching, Erica and I, this very closely from the beginning, this H5N1, H5N2, this bird flu. Come on. And it's being pushed around in a way that reminds me very much of what's being done to Russia via the Ukraine battlefield theater. All the attacks on Russia proper are being done with utter intent to force Russia, at least that's what it would seem, into a massive war, if not a nuclear war, and no evidence whatsoever of a de-escalation. Nothing. And the same thing can be said about the bird flu thing on a perhaps a more sanguine level. But every story that comes out seems to be incrementally pushing us further toward the concept that they are going to let out their tweaked, laboratory-tweaked H5N1 variant, bird flu variant, avian influenza variant. They're moving in that direction. It's nonstop. And the latest today is, let me just back up a little bit here. If you remember, they began the bird flu panic by saying, uh-oh, bird flu has been found in cattle, primarily the udder in the female cow in dairy farms. And they were saying then, it is in milk, it has been found in dairy products, but the pasteurization, allegedly, is killing it, destroying the H5N1 or whichever it is, whatever variant it is, that influenza. And it's gone. So you don't have to worry about getting it in your milk. Or I don't know. Anyway, it's a lot of noise and information. Then they say it's being found in rats. Rats. Rats being scapegoated again. Who knows? I'm being funny here. And then they found it in penguins at the South Pole. Now, how do these things pop up all of a sudden all over the place? Unless, well, the answer is obvious, they're being planted. And people know or are being told where to look and where to test. Now it turns out that it's being found in mice. Not rats, mice. It's being found in house mice. So they're setting the stage to begin to beat the drums, to pound on the drums of paranoia and fear and worry. That's what it looks like is happening right now. Will they deploy their H5N1? It looks like they very well might. And one of the reasons I say that is because they've already got, I don't know, is it 50 million doses of an untested, unproven avian influenza vaccine on the shelf right now. They're ready to do the same thing they did with COVID. But we will say this also, and I'll let Erica repeat it. The real worry about this is if they do release an H5N1, whether it's a primary or a variant, they're claiming now 10 to 15% death rate, case fatality rate. Now, that's not a stretch because when you think about the fact that up to 90% of Americans have had one or more COVID bioweapon injections, which have in every case damaged or nearly destroyed their immune system. So they've got no immunological barrier to the influx of H5N1 variants, plural, which they'll probably do if they release it. They won't just release one. That's what their game is. So anyway, it looks like avian flu might be the next one, right? They also have an Ebola-type virus that has been developed and played with. And there are several countries, one of them I think is Japan, that has taken the COVID influenza and made it 80% deadly, not just whatever it is now, which it's low, not 80%. And I think another country, was it China? Yes, China, has created it's a COVID virus that is 100% fatal. That's what it was. I thought they had something else there. I just found it. 100% fatality of a tweaked, and they admit it, COVID virus. Why are they doing that? Just for fun? No, they're going to use them. one way or the other. All right. Are you there, partner?
I'm here.
Did I put you to sleep there?
No, no.
I didn't hear any snoring, so I guess we're okay. I think there's a lot on the table, as always. Their underlying push is always to keep chaos up at a certain level so people can't really distill and understand what's going on out there. But they are clearly tweaking the avian influenza, and they have already produced a lot of vaccines, and there are many more in the works. Now, there was an omnibus spending bill just passed by the Congress, not our Congress, but the Congress, which had in it, surprise, surprise, $1 billion hidden in there to do what? Tell everyone. What's it for?
Oh, for the next plandemic, right? Plandemic spending?
Exactly. That's right. They've already adjudicated that $1 billion will be available to quickly make, again, untested vaccines en masse if it needs to be done. And they wouldn't have put the billion in there if they weren't planning on doing it. So as I say, all the indicators are we're headed toward the next one, and the next plandemic will be, in all likelihood, avian flu. That's what it looks like.
It does appear that way. You know, the stage is being set, at least in the media, which is how the COVID thing started, right?
Well, that's their broadcast dissemination platform, and you bet.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, here, new house mice test is positive for bird flu. So it looks like they will turn the deadly lab-tweaked H5N1 loose on humanity, about 90% of whom have no real viable immune function left because they've been injected 1, 2, 6, 8 times in many cases. So this really could be a massacre, another massacre, which is what I think they're planning on doing. Remember, the last 5 months of this year are going to be chaos from hell on wheels. That's my take at this point.
I would agree.
Do you see anything that would, I mean, is there any sign of de-escalation of the bird flu? No. They're pushing it. So that tells you.
No, well, you know, this is the decade of the vaccine, right?
It's the decade of the lab-created virus for damn sure, and the vaccine as well. It's the bioweapon. So the number of house mice infected with H5N1 bird flu at a poultry farm in New Mexico has risen to nearly 50. Doesn't sound like much, but the feds, you know, they don't need much to start running berserk with this stuff. 50, say federal officials, and they said that yesterday. This is just a week after bird flu was found in rodents for the first time. So a week later, gee, 50 mice show up with it in New Mexico. The Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service at the U.S. Department of Agriculture reported in its weekly update that another 36 house mice had tested positive for H5N1 in New Mexico. The first 11 cases were reported last week, so now they've got 50. So they're off and running. They can take this as far and as fast as their little mainstream and alt-news-controlled news platforms want it to go. Will everybody buy in? Hopefully not as many as bought into the COVID death trap. But these people, when they start seeing a 10 to 15% death rate repeated over and over again, they're going to become afraid. Trust me.
I would agree. I don't know. You know, these injections ended up really hurting a lot of people. And I think there's extreme mistrust. I don't know what percentage of the population will be agreeable to being injected now.
We won't know until it's rolled out, and we'll see. But it's all there. All the ingredients are there. They're all in the mixing bowl, and it's ready to be popped in the oven and baked up as another plandemic. It's ready. So they picked on the cows. They picked on the rats. They picked on the penguins. And now the house mice. You know, they don't miss a trick.
Well, don't forget the chickens. How many heads of poultry were...
thank you. I was going to ask that.
Euthanized. Here, was it 97 million at last count?
You are right. 97 million chickens, most of whom are probably egg layers in this country, have been killed off, culled, what, in the last 3 months?
2 years.
4 months?
I think since 2022, since they've
been playing
this game.
It's really escalated, though, with arson fires in the last several months. There have been a lot more. So anyway, it's almost 100 million dead chickens. That's pushing the food price up higher. People now in America are beginning to go without a meal a day because they can't afford to buy food. That's the truth. That's not everybody, of course, but that's the lower middle class and the lower class. And they don't eat regularly, many of them, in any case. So it does look like bird flu is going to be turned loose.
It does. I would agree.
We will see. Now, anything you want to add before we bring on our special guest here?
No. Let's bring her on.
By the way, you have been suggesting, we have been suggesting for a long time now, that it does look like a tsunami of death is growing.
Yeah, I can see it.
And one of the reasons we think that is because the rotten medical community, there are some good people in it, but many of them are rotten, they're just evil, can use dozens of different tags to put on a death certificate as a cause of death, which have nothing in writing to do with what really killed the people. So they can lie all they want. But there are a lot of people in big trouble. Okay, Nurse Anne, our colleague and friend for years now, is back with us tonight. She is working again at a major frontline hospital. She's right there putting her life on the line to try to help people. Last time she was on, we spent some time talking about the level of incompetence that many of the nursing hires from third world countries are bringing into the hospitals, and it was damn scary stuff, and it's probably worse by now. Hello there, Anne, and welcome back.
Hello, Erica and Jeff. How are you?
Hi, Anne. Good, how are you?
Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you. So you took a little break, and you went back at it, and a lot of people are going to say, why the hell did you do that? Why did you go back? It's so dangerous. You're so brave. We understand. But what was it really that motivated you? You want to help humanity. I know. We know that. But that's a real tough decision, I would think.
It is tough. But that being said, there's still a few people out there that still need an advocate while they're in the hospital. And... usually the nurses are the last line of defense for them. And in the arena where I am, most of the time in the intensive care units, the patients can't speak to themselves and the families are bamboozled by too much information. And so the nurses usually are their last hope if they're willing to speak up. And most nurses in the intensive care environment and the critical care areas will do that for patients.
And, well, that's good to hear.
That's the positive.
We've been railing about this. You've got to have an advocate. If you end up in the hospital out of control, so to speak, who's going to stand up for you? They'll come in and jab you with anything they want.
They still need a consent from somebody. Like, it has to be a consent from a patient or a patient's power of attorney. They can't just willy-nilly give you something that...
Well, I understood, but a patient who's been suffered a serious, concussion, whatever, they're out of it. They're not thinking. They're feverish. They're not... Yeah, go ahead. Give it to me. I don't care. You got to have help. So in some cases... You will stand up for a patient and intercede on their behalf?
I will. I mean, I had met some patient who had not yet been vaccinated, which was a relief. But I thought I was walking into a war zone and basically seeing everybody vaccinated. But there was a few patients who came into our ICU who had yet not been vaccinated. It was a great relief to know this. And once they came, yeah, just a very few. I mean, you can count them on one hand. But once they came through their ordeal, we were able to, you know, talk to them, or I was able to talk to them and say, you know, if you haven't been vaccinated, don't get this vaccine or any other vaccine going forward.
Any other vaccine. Thank you for saying that. We've been saying the same thing. No needles. You don't need them. Not now.
No. And the patients are very grateful for the honesty. And there was a study done many years ago before the famous COVID bioweapon was leased on the public. But the one thing that came out of it was that what kind of people in the medical profession people would trust the most. And the nurses always were in the lead role of that. Because they are willing to stand up and stick their neck out. I mean, there are some physicians who are, they have this big ego and they're rather obnoxious at times. But even then, you have to just take your decision. It's not easy when you're a new nurse because you're afraid to say anything. But as a more senior nurse, you're more than willing to speak up because you can see mistakes will happen and or bad advice is given. And if the physician isn't willing to give the right information or correct information to the patient, then someone else has to be an advocate for that patient. Most often it's the nurse, because the nurse is always there. We're there 24/7.
I know. All right. You're back at it. What are the current trends? Anything
it's
new in the last couple, 3 months? Go ahead.
When I'm off, I listen to your show, and what Erica has been uncovering has been exactly pretty much what is trending. Their biggest problems we're having is what seems to be explosions of cancerous masses all over, like in the head, in the organs, you name it. We don't find out about it unless there's somebody who falls. This is the first part of the puzzle. The patient falls at home or in a facility or somewhere else.
Right.
And the ambulance goes, picks them up. They're taking them to the hospital. And when we're doing the workup, we come to find out after the diagnostics come back, there's a mass. Usually, we find it in the head, or in the lungs, or the organs. There's a big attack on the stomach, and you're seeing cancerous masses forming there. In addition to that, people are having huge problems with their GI tracts. Like, they're having bleeds, spontaneous bleeds. There has to be a reason for it. It's not necessarily an ulcer that, you know, causes the event. Just a host of things. But it's not one single event. They'll come in with the a mass that we find on the CT or on the MRI,
excuse me, in many cases, these people are not coming into the hospital because of suspicion of a mass. It's found on the workup, correct?
It's found upon, yeah, correct. It's exactly that. It's found by accident, nearly 9 times out of 10.
Wow.
By accident. Like there was a lady recently we got in, and her, she was young. She was only 61. She was still at work, and she got lightheaded and dizzy and fell in her workplace, and they brought her in. Mm-hmm. And apparently she was healthy up till that point. She had no other health issues at 61, or why would
right.
you, right?
right.
So
right.
she ended up having a CAT scan done because of the fall, and the MRI, followed by an MRI, and it showed that she had multiple masses in her brain, not just one, multiple. And then they did a CAT scan of her torso to see how, see if there was anything going on there, and they found a lung nodule in her right lung. And so, and she's not a smoker. She lived a very healthy life, and she was so upset when she got the news. She wanted to leave the hospital. So she actually insisted on leaving the hospital, and she called her family to come pick her up, and her family would not come pick her up because they felt that's where she needed to be, because we were waiting to get a biopsy done of the nodule in her lung. Well, she left our unit, and she went downstairs, and one of the other nurses went down to talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
This happened during day shift, because I'm a night shift nurse now. So they went down to talk to her and try and reason with her, and she finally came back to the floor, and she decided to stay. But she was going to leave against medical advice. And so she is exceptionally sick. They're like, the worst has not happened for her yet. She's just been given the diagnosis. And now she doesn't know what she's about to face. But there's a big cancer hospital in the area that she's going to be referred to. And the problem is it's not just one site in the brain. It's multiple masses in the brain and in the nodule in her lung as well, which they strongly believe it will be cancerous in nature too.
Now, these people will just kind of assume that they've been injected with the bioweapon.
Unfortunately, right? This lady was, and she was injected by, she had had two Pfizer vaccinations because her work mandated it.
Right. So she was going to leave ADA, and she came back because she respected you and the people who were there. That's kind of nice to see. But honestly, she's got two, three shots. Now she's got masses, two. She's got masses. And these are probably turbo. And the prognosis is not good. What does oncology offer these people? Anything new other than cut, slash, and burn?
Well, see, it's such a right now it's such a new case that they're doing a couple of things. So of course she got super anxious about everything, as you know. So they put her on anti-anxiety medication to try and calm her down a little bit. But they're giving her Decadron. Is the medication they give, because there's some swelling around the areas of the masses in the brain also. So that's to try and bring down that swelling. And they're giving her, like, that's like a steroid. So that helps bring down the swelling. And then they had asked if, it's kind of a weird situation, because they asked the IR department to look, try and see if she'd be a candidate for the biopsy of her lung. And they came back and they basically said they don't think so, because they felt that the nodule in her lung was too small to actually biopsy. So now they have a pulmonary consult out to see if the pulmonary team will come in and see if they can do a special type of a biopsy on that mass. So it's become a very complicated case, and right now I don't even know. Honestly, Jeff, I honestly do not know if surgery will be able to help her in this scenario, because it's not just in one location of her brain.
Understood.
And
those are the two visible determinations. There are things going on that are very small, could be all over the body.
Could be all over the body, yeah.
Now, Erica monitors, you know, like a lot of our listeners do, they'll monitor their local EMT dispatcher calls, and the number of falls, F-A-L-L-S, is, I guess, it's not diminishing, is it, Erica? You're hearing this a lot.
No, they're still happening. And, you know, a wide age group. Who knows what it's from. But on the topic of these lesions in the brain and the lung, I know one of the things that's coming up in these immune-compromised people that can be mistaken for cancer is actually a fungal infection known as aspergillosis. And these lesions may actually be little balls of fungus. And they tend to happen in the lungs and the brain. So you wouldn't actually know if it's cancer or this fungal formation, you know, without doing a biopsy. But,
exactly.
Aspergillosis.
Now, I heard one of the teams mention something like that to her, but I do believe that they firmly believe it's more, they feel like it's actually cancerous in nature, but they didn't want to say it to her totally because they want to give her the hope that it's not.
Right.
You know, so that's why they had convinced her to try and come back and at least get the biopsy done. But in regards to your falls, I can back it up with all of the information that I have. I have, and as you said, it goes across the board, the type of patients that are coming through our doors. Like the last one I talked to, that lady was 61. She passed out of work, and then she comes in and she gets the work up. There was a 63-year-old in. There was a 77-year-old last week. There was a 57-year-old lady.
Yep.
The other day. So the ages are, I mean, they're as going into the 40s.
Yes.
They're
yeah.
as young as at 40. And they're just all of a sudden passing out. And
yep.
you'll only hear through the EMS passed out, you know, they wonder if they're diabetic. I think sometimes they try to think that's a possibility. But when they come in, they've passed out either for a reason, and either they this is what happens. They've either thrown a clot, they've had a stroke of some sort, they've passed out, hit their head. Now they have a brain bleed. We just had one lady that that happened to, where they hit their head, had a brain bleed, so they ended up having to treat that. Another person, they ended up falling. They passed out. They had a stroke. There wasn't a bleed, so they got in the window of time to treat them with the blood thinner. And then apparently it backfired on them, and they ended up giving too much of that, the TNK, the clot breaker medication. They gave too much of that and ended up going the other way, and then the patient ended up hemorrhaging in the brain.
Well, how do these medications work with amyloid clots in the brain? They shouldn't work, and that's even more discouraging. So I don't. This is really not getting good. So all right. Overall, are you seeing more and more people coming in with discovered terminal issues, or are you seeing more and more people come in and they're on the way out and they just don't know it yet? They're dying. They know they've got cancer. What is the death rate? What is the prognosis, the overall prognosis atmosphere of patients coming into the hospital now?
To be honest, Jeff, when they come in, they don't know they have, most of them don't know they have cancer or some form of a mass. They don't know it until we do the workup. What's usually happening is they're coming through the ER doors and they're saying they passed out. It's either cardiac related, meaning they had thrown a clot or a new onset atrial fibrillation, or they had a heart attack, or they've had some form of a stroke. That's what they usually start out with until they start doing the CAT scan and then the MRI, and they find that they have the mass or some form of a clot somewhere, you know, that shouldn't be there. And that's how it's all found by accident. It's never, it's not like they know in advance. Most patients are really surprised when they come in to find out what's going on. Like, I can give you an example of this 57-year-old, for example.
Right.
This person came into the hospital and apparently had, on May 4th, had a recent CVA stroke. It was found to have been related to a cardiac event called supraventricular dysrhythmia. So that ended up causing her to have the stroke. It left her with the right-sided weakness, and she was unable to speak. And then on 5/26, while she was in the hospital, she ends up going into respiratory failure. And her blood sugars just drop. She ends up going, blood sugars are in the 40s. And she's completely, developed aspiration pneumonia because the family were trying to feed her food and it went into her lungs. So this is how she ended up going into respiratory failure. So now when she was once able to somehow, you know, kind of communicate, you know, after the stroke, she couldn't speak, but she could communicate with us to some degree. Now she's getting vented. She's now put on a ventilator because she's in respiratory failure. And now she's her blood sugars are going crazy. So they triggered up by an infection, a really bad infection that's in the lungs. And now she's sicker. Now she's sicker than what she was before she came in.
Uh huh.
And gosh. So, but she had a ton of triggers that happened because she was so sickly to begin with. She had had that bad stroke, and then she had a history of hypertension and high cholesterol and diabetes. So, and
right.
then she ended up with the infection, and it all went downhill from there. That lady is still in there on the ventilator at this point, and she's 57 years of age.
Wow.
There are so many people out there, many of them are listening right now, who have been vax-injured and vax-disabled, who are sick from multiple issues, many of which they don't even know about yet. They think there's one or two things wrong with them. But in point of fact, it can cascade very quickly, I would think. And when you look at the overall tenor of the times, the populace out there, I just have a feeling that a lot of people are really sick, disabled, sick, not feeling good, sick. And they hide it. Understood. I would too. And they go out and they try to act normal. We see them out all the time. So how, in your view, how common are vax injured now? In society as a whole, we've got 330 million people here. I think we've lost 10% dead in the last 3.5-4 years. That would bring it down to 300 million. And I don't think the average person would notice if 1 out of 10 people disappeared over 4 years. I don't think that'll happen. And I know the feds would lie about it. They're admitting to 1 million dead. You know, that's a major crime in and of itself. But the reality is not 1 million. It's 20 to 30, I think. Do you think that there's a possibility?
Well, most of the people coming in, I would say a high 95% of the people coming through the emergency room doors in this hospital, and I could probably guarantee in any other hospital too, that they're vaccinated. They're definitely
yes.
vaccinated.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if they're not vaccinated, they're living with somebody who was vaccinated. So
well, there's our shedding
the
issue.
That's
again.
The other side of the coin. So,
yeah.
And like this lady's story didn't end there. She ended up with a GI bleed on 5/29 and ended up, was coming from an ulcer that she had. They found a duodenal ulcer on her. They found that she was iron deficient and she she ended up getting blood transfusions because her hemoglobin's dropped. And
well,
then,
we all know what blood transfusions will give her, spike and quite possibly mRNA. That blood is not clean. Is that talked about among staffers, that the blood is dangerous?
The nurses now are waking up to everything that went on. But a lot of them had a hard time anyway. I've talked to a lot of travel nurses this time around, and
right.
It's amazing to hear them say, I didn't want to take it, but I had to do it because I was the only one supporting my family. I had to do it for the job. I had to do it because my job was mandating it.
And they're still working.
A lot of them will say that.
Yeah.
And so they could still work. And I was listening to your show, I think it was Monday night, and you were talking about What the Nurses Saw by Ken McCarthy.
Yeah.
And I went and I got the book, and I already knew. But for the nurses who weren't clued in, I'm going to bring it to the hospital and casually leave it lying around and let's see who's interested to pick it up. Because, to be honest with you, there was a lot of nurses who turned a blind eye to a lot of stuff. And I mean, there was many, many times when I was asked, when I was working, to hang remdesivir, and I couldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. And I refused to, and someone else would have to hang it. You know, I mean, the thing was, is it became such a personal issue for me. I said it to one doctor, I don't want that blood on my hands. I remember
we know who you are, and your integrity is through the roof. Most people don't have that. They'll look the other way. They just won't talk. They need that paycheck. And they are literally killing people right there in full view with hospital protocols. And they know it. A lot of them have to know it, don't they?
The doctors have to know it because with the training, I mean, that's 7 years wasted if you didn't actually know what you're doing. And anyway, there's a trend. There's a trend there, for starters. The trend is they come in presenting with one symptom or maybe two at most, and then they get sicker during their hospital stay, and either they leave worse than they came in, or they don't leave at all. They leave in a body bag. Those are the only two scenarios. So, you know, the doctors have to know. They have to know.
Of course they know. Jeez.
Yeah.
Come on.
A lot of the nurses really did. It was tragic because a lot of nurses did it because they had to keep, you know, their families going. They were the only provider.
There was one
who really struggled with the whole thing. They really did.
But murder is murder. And murder is murder. And you know that. And you won't murder people. And I don't want to reduce it to some ridiculous, simplistic sounding thing, but that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, but and that's the thing. I mean, we're short in the profession now. We're so short, it's not even funny. They can't get the nurses out of nursing school fast enough because there's such a cry for nurses at this point. But the new nurses that are coming in are so inexperienced, and they're losing all those skilled nurses that will basically tell them, you know, just because the doctors tell you to do something doesn't mean you should.
Where are these nurses going? Are they just retiring, quitting, or are they dying, some of them?
They're retiring. Most of them retired. I know that there was a few, right, that it was very tragic. There was one one of our companions in the ICU. She was found dead in her car one morning. She was missing for 2 days, and her family were looking for her, and they finally found her. She had left a party and was on her way home, and she was found dead in her car. They never actually said what the cause of death was, but it wasn't foul play. Let's just put it that way.
She was vaxxed.
She was vaccinated.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, let me approach this from a little different perspective for a moment. Somebody goes into the hospital complaining of abdominal pains. They have no history of vax injury, but they've been vaxed 2, 3, 4 times. when you get that person in there, is that first of all, is that asked of them immediately, how many vaccines have you taken, if you've taken any at all? Is that asked and put on their chart?
That's asked. Okay. It's asked right away. And it's asked again when they're admitted onto the unit.
Very
it's
good.
It's part of the paperwork.
Okay, that said, somebody comes in with one symptom, bad enough for them to go to the hospital, ER, or to just go and be admitted, whatever. If you do a full workup on that vaxxed individual, what are the chances you're going to find other instances of injuries from the bioweapon injection? Other instances of injuries, different kinds of injuries, a mass in the head, a mass in the lungs, whatever. And they came in presenting with a digestion issue, whatever. Okay, so tell me what you're seeing.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say that they come in with the one injury or two injuries maybe. Because it's usually, I can tell you how it goes. It's usually cardiac related or it's either stroke related. Those are the biggies. Those are the big ones. There's a few respiratory cases, but that comes later, I think. Thing about it is, they'll come in and then they're asked right away if they're vaxxed. If they're vaxxed, you already know there's good odds. They'll find other problems.
Yes, other pathologies at work already.
Yeah, they will. And then for an example, and this was kind of shameful on the part of the emergency room, but I had a patient who came in, and he was young. He was only in his 40s, if I recall, and he had been admitted to rule out a stroke because he had presented with weakness on one side, and he could talk, but he was weak on one side.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was in the ER for hours. Like, they're on a gurney for probably 12 to 14 hours on a gurney. So this is no joke. The ER is sinking down there. So he comes up to the intensive care unit to me, and mm-hmm. I'm doing his assessment, and I go to check his movement on his limbs, his lower limbs, and his whole left leg is ice cold. Like, it's like it was in an ice bag. And I look to see what was written from the ER. Nobody had documented anything about this finding.
Oh, my.
And so he had been seen by the triage nurse, by the nurse in the back of the ER, the doctor down in the ER, and they were admitting him with a stroke. So they should have been checking his limbs, one would think. And so he comes up to me, and I'm checking his limbs for movement, but when I touch them, his one leg is absolutely frigid. I cannot get a pulse in that whole leg. I went from his foot all the way up to his groin.
How did he get bumped along to you? It's like checking tires on a car. They didn't do it.
Yes. Yeah, it was a big miss. It was a big miss, and he didn't have a pulse in that entire leg. And that guy, I guarantee you, dimes to dollars, that guy has a big, long spike protein in that leg. I guarantee it.
Oh, a huge clot. Yes, amyloid clot.
Huge clot.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah. Erica?
And I didn't want to do...
Right. Erica, go ahead. You got some things you want to get in here with.
Oh, no, I'm just taking it in. It's, you know...
Well, here's somebody that jumps
through...
Oh, and
I love this, Jeff. Let me just add one more caveat to this wonderful story.
Yeah.
So, not disregard the fact that I'm 26 years a nurse. This young nurse comes in the room, and she goes, "What do you mean you can't find a pulse? So you're supposed to be able to palpate the pulses in the legs and the hands." And she, I said, "Can I get a Doppler?" So I'm trying to find it with the Doppler, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can't find it with a Doppler machine. So she says, "Maybe I'll try." And so she's there fudging around, right? I'm like, okay, this is going to be good. And so the patient is in the room now. Now he wasn't nervous before, but now he's super nervous. You've already now brought on a whole other situation. And then, just to add insult to injury, she walks out and she gets her comrade, who's another young punk, in the room to check the patient's pulse as well with the Doppler, who to confirm that my clinical abilities had been confounded and correct. If I wasn't as insulted like you, you couldn't imagine how upset I was by the whole ordeal.
I'm sure.
So,
I'm sure.
Oh my goodness, yeah. So I made a big stink about it. I really made a big stink about it, and I said I flat out refused to work with them two nurses again, and on that unit.
This is not hospital death protocols as much as it is gross negligence and incompetence, which is just as bad. It'll kill people either way. It's not safe to go into a hospital unless they can get you as a nurse. Being a little bit facetious here.
Based on that story alone, there's at least three or four different people who did not find that finding for nearly 12 to 15 hours on that patient. Because I saw him 15 hours later.
Staggering. Staggering. I'm surprised his leg didn't turn blue. This is crazy.
Well, do we know what happened? You know, what's the situation now?
So wasn't back the next night, but I know that the doctors were going to be taking him down, and they were going to basically see if they could find out anything else with that leg. Like, they're going to do an X-ray, and they were going to do a few more studies. And obviously, they're going to take him down, and if there's a clot in there, they're going to remove it. But it's
I think you're right.
He's got the length off his foot. They're going to cut him from groin to his ankle.
Right. No, this is really awful. Awful to hear about. Are you getting to the point where death is something you can handle? It must be. You must be able to handle it easier than perhaps you used to be able to. You're seeing too many people die. You're saying half of them are going out, or not half, but a lot of them are going out the back door now in body bags. You must be seeing a lot of people not make it.
There is a lot of people that won't make it because they get to us too late. And if they get to us as well, they think they're coming in with one problem, and ultimately they actually have more than that. And
well,
if
that's
they don't,
I mentioned
they'll
that
end
earlier.
Up with more. Yeah,
I mentioned that earlier.
But is it getting easier? I don't know if it's getting easier. I think part of it is after I lost my own mother, and I'm convinced that it was because of the vaccine. I think it was my drive to keep pushing on to try and help others and make sure they didn't end up in that same scenario.
Right.
And at least, try and see if there was some way I could prevent it happening to someone else.
Well, that's as high a calling as you can follow. It's what nursing is supposed to be. One thing that Nurse Ann told us a long time ago was when she trained to be a nurse, the whole idea was to bring people into the hospital, help them get better, and send them home healthier. That's not happening very often at all anymore, is it?
No. That's a rare event. They don't go home anyway most of the time. What happens is if we do get them somewhat better, they end up going to like a rehab facility or something like that.
Right.
They don't actually get to go home.
Are you seeing many patients come in there who are prepared to advocate for themselves or who have someone who comes in with them to advocate? And I say that with the idea that anyone advocating must have a certain baseline knowledge about physiology and medicine and life. Are these competent advocates? How many have advocates at all?
Well, the thing about it is it depends, because if they hold the doctors in high esteem, they're going to be less likely to
listen
to
the nurse. They won't be doing much advocacy. I get it.
Because how do you compete with that? You know, it's very difficult.
Right. Right. Wow. All right, we're just about out of time. Last question, Erica, or anything else you want to add?
What's the staff-to-patient ratio now? Has that improved? Because for a while there, it was...
crazy, yeah. It's not so bad. We're about to lose a few nurses. They're going back home. So the month of June, July, and August is going to be a little bit harder. But I'm at four to one right now is the ratio for me now.
Okay, that's at one point it was like 7 to 1.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. But it's much improved at the minute.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
Well, fingers crossed. Thank you, Nurse Ann, very much. We'll hope to talk to you soon. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're welcome.
Okay.
Thank you.
You be well. You take care.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
All right. Well, there couldn't be possibly enough people like that working in that field. She's a rare one.
Yeah, I agree. You really take your chances now when you seek medical care at one of these facilities. You don't know what you're going to get. Maybe you get lucky.
What she said was very interesting. If the patient still trusts doctors, they're not going to be worried about advocating for themselves and asking questions.
Yeah,
they're just going to do whatever they're told to do. And how many nurses, when a doctor will write, remdesivir, we'll put the bag up. It seems to me like most of them will, without any hesitation. And that's science fiction. It's crazy.
It is interesting that they're starting to ask the question of, you know, are you vaxxed and how many have you had?
Twice. Yeah, they ask it twice. And I don't know how much comfort that's going to be to all those who have died, but... it is interesting. Let's see. All right. Well, that was a very compelling update, as we always get from Nurse Ann. We'll hope to have her back again soon. She's right on the inside, friends, and you're not going to get better or more honest information than you do from that lady. Well, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's a real treat.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Go get some sleep.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Okay, gang, we'll be right back with more in just a few minutes. Hold on.